Hi, everyone. It's Judy Warner. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. I haven't been this excited about a guest in a long time. We're going to talk today to Robert Ferenc, who I'm sure is a familiar name to you. He's a popular YouTuber and also the founder of FedEvil Design. He teaches PCB design to people around the world, and many enjoy the content he produces. He talks about what it takes to be a popular YouTuber, the work it takes to go into producing all the great content he does, and we also talk about the keynote talk he's going to give at Altium Live in San Diego, October 9th through 11th. I think you're going to love this one. Lean in and enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Well, Robert, I am so excited about today's podcast. I'm excited to learn more about your background and sort of learn about the man behind the brand. So welcome to the On Track podcast.
Thank you very much, Judy. And I would like to welcome, or I would like to thank you very much also, you know, all the other audience for this listening. And I really hope maybe they will find it interesting and they will enjoy this podcast.
I'm sure they will. So today, Robert is hailing from Slovakia. Two years ago when we met, he was a speaker at Altium Live here in San Diego. And what were you living in San Jose at that time, Robert?
Actually, we didn't want to stay exactly in San Jose because it's quite expensive there.
Expensive and trafficky, yeah.
Yeah, so we choose or we pick a location exactly between San Francisco and Los Angeles. And you know, when I needed to travel to San Francisco or San Jose, it was just one way, and the other way was the Los Angeles, and I could do it like in one day, so it was quite good location. Smart. And we didn't have to pay like very high rent, and there was no traffic, as you said, so it was much easier.
So I'm excited, before we get started, just to give our listeners some background, I'm excited that a couple months ago, both Robert and I happened to be at Embedded World in, where was it, Nuremberg we were?
Yes.
In Nuremberg. And so we ran into each other at the Altium booth there and connected. And I asked Robert if he would be willing to be a keynote speaker at this year's San Diego's Altium Live. And he said yes. And so I'm very excited to talk about what he's going to talk about, but also learn more about Robert. If you don't know Robert, you're going to know about him today and hopefully go find the great content that he puts out both on YouTube and on his website, fedevil.com. So Robert, why don't you start out and just give our listeners sort of a brief overview of your background as an engineer and sort of how you found your passion in this career.
I consider myself kind of lucky that I had this opportunity to start working on quite a complex board almost immediately after I left university. And I only can see it now that how lucky I was, because I see many engineers, they start with positions, they need to like work very hard to start working on real and big projects. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky, and because I started working on very complex boards almost from beginning, I was able to get quite a lot of experience. And basically, after a couple of years, I had the opportunity to design like processor boards or motherboards. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after like, I think it was like 5 years or maybe 6 years, I find out, or I was thinking like, maybe I would like to change. I would like to have a little bit of change, and I decided to do some freelancing. So I left the regular job. And yeah, and then basically everything started when I find out that I don't have to always only do hardware design, and there is also the other way what I could do, or there is different way what I could do and what I like to do, and that's like teaching people or trying to share the knowledge how to design these complex parts. And I like to see people who then say like, your videos helped me a lot, or your courses helped me to find a new job, or I was able to design my very first board, you know. It's like, it's very nice to hear this kind of feedback from people.
Yeah. So you just started right away, just like you wanted to share your knowledge, and you just started putting them out on YouTube just to share?
Initially, my, you know, when I left my everyday job, mm-hmm. I knew that when I will be doing freelancing, I have to somehow find my customers, the people what will pay me for my work.
Yes.
And one of the ways what was very popular at the time was writing a blog. Uh-huh. So I started writing a blog. And also what happened, or the reason why I actually started my YouTube channel, was because usually I was designing whole board. It means I started with the specification, then I was doing the schematic PCB layout. I had to also do all the testing and maybe some firmware and all these kind of things.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. So basically what happened, there were like big gaps between some specific task what I had to do, for example, in Altium. Mm-hmm. And what I found out is that after a couple of months, I wanted to use a feature, which I knew I used it like 5 months ago, but I had no idea. I completely forgot how to do it. So I started making these videos, YouTube uh-huh. videos, basically for myself. So I can remember how to do it. And more people were watching the videos. So, you know, that's how my blog started, and that's how my YouTube channel started.
That's amazing. So how many followers or how many subscribers to your YouTube channel now?
I'm very happy because I know there are channels with like hundreds of thousands of
right.
followers. I have currently 24,000, and I think it's I'm very happy for every subscriber, because I think the videos what I do, they are quite special, and like, I mean, they are focused to quite small group of people.
Exactly.
And so I'm not really sure, maybe my main intention is not grow number of subscribers, because I know that if I would like to have, I don't know, 500,000 subscribers, then my content would have to change.
Yeah.
And it cannot be so specific, but who knows, maybe after a couple of years I will need to add some kind of more common
well I don't
stuff.
You and I'm listening to you, and I'm sort of stunned by the amount of parallels that there are between you and I, and I'll tell you about those in a minute. But before that, how did you end up launching? So you started on the YouTube channel, and then how did you end up launching Fedevil? And then I think you're using Udemy to provide some paid courses for the more complex things, because obviously those take a lot of time and effort to create those deepest. So how did you make that jump from a YouTuber basically to starting a training company?
What happened is when I started writing the blog and making the videos, I also, and you know, more and more people know about me. They started sending me emails with questions. And I could see that many questions, they were very basic, or some of them were like very similar. And it was not very difficult to answer the questions. What was difficult was to answer these questions like every single person.
Over and over again, like maybe
exactly
the same question a bunch of times rather than just broadcasting or teaching at one time. That makes sense.
And also, you know, it takes a lot of time to answer everyone. So there was one day when I was thinking like, okay, you know, everyone, and I told this couple of times before, so maybe someone already heard this story.
But not the On Track podcast. Bring it.
Okay, so what basically happened, one day I was like thinking how to do it because I had full inbox of emails. And I decided to create a form, like Google form.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted on my blog that if there will be like 100 people who would like to sign up for a course where I would explain all these questions, what they keep asking all the time. And if there will be these 100 people who would be interested to pay $100, then I will make a course where I will explain it. And I posted this form on my blog. And like, I don't remember exactly how long it took, but very quickly there was like 100 people who signed up. And I had to create the courses.
That's great.
So basically that's how it all started. And there was, I think when I finished the course or when it was ready, there was like 200 people on the list. And when I posted the my very first course online, it was very interesting feeling because I could see like, you know, all these people signing up and I could see like $100, $200, $500.
Right.
And I think, and in one day I was very surprised how much people signed up and I was a little bit of scared because, I felt very responsible because many people signed up and I was scared like I'm not going to deliver what their expectations are.
Right.
And I was not sure if they are going to like the format of the video, if they are going to find it useful. And I was worried like if they don't like it, I will need to return all the payments and everything. And
oh, you didn't know what you're getting yourself into, no, did you?
No, absolutely not. And I have to say, like, I published the course in the middle. So the course was not even completely finished because people, they kept asking when it will be available. Yeah.
Oh.
So it was like 5 lessons and I published the course and then I felt even more stressed because I had to finish all the other lessons.
Wow. Well, I wanted to back up to your point about the subscribers you have on YouTube because you and I have this in common. And by the way, Robert, I started out by blogging. I'd never blogged before. At the time I was working at a circuit board manufacturer that did a lot of RF and microwave circuit boards. And I saw this need and this dynamic, much like you did. You saw this thing, right, where RF engineers who may have a PhD in microwave technology or whatever, they were being asked and required to lay out their own boards, and they had no experience in this. And then they'd go to a circuit board manufacturer, and the circuit board manufacturer might have built something on, say, Rogers 4350, which processes pretty similar to FR4. It's not as hard. It's pretty stable. So the circuit board manufacturer didn't know what they didn't know. So they're like, sure, we'll build this 6000 series Rogers, and then, or 5000 series, which is Teflon 5880, and it would turn to bubble gum and it was unstable. So the engineers didn't know what they were talking about, and the circuit board manufacturers, I'm like, this is like a perfect storm. And I knew you know, I work for a very small but very capable RF and microwave circuit board shop. So I just started writing a little blog about this is what you need to know about these different materials. You know, here, when you go look for a circuit board manufacturer, this is what you should be looking for. Like, don't, if they just say yes, don't listen. So I started writing these blogs, and the blog got picked up by Microwave Journal, which is hilarious because it's a peer-reviewed microwave magazine, like the top one in the world. And so, like you, then people started asking questions. And so for 3 years, I blogged. So I called myself the accidental marketer, which reminds me of you. You're like the accidental YouTube star. Right? You noticed a need and you started filling it, and then you're like, holy cow, you know? And I can so relate to that because I got into the same exact situation. Now, fast forward to where I am today here at Altium is, well, here it's like, oh, do a podcast. I'm like, holy cow. But I'm sort of trying to fill that same gap between all design and manufacturing and the whole, like you said, when you were designing, you're doing the concept, the schematic. There's so many things involved in the design and then thinking about all the secondary stakeholders all the way down to test, right? And mechanical considerations and coding firmware. But today's engineers are more and more at a university level being asked to be very multidisciplinary and have this sort of systems thinking, but they're not really getting it in university. So to your point about your YouTube subscribership, I think we've had about 28,000 downloads on the On Track podcast, and that's not impressive numbers either. But I think what I want to say to you is having that many subscribers talking about a very extremely narrow topic is impressive, right? Because there's only so many people in the world that do what you're teaching, right? And there's only so many people in the world that care about design and design for manufacturing that would listen to a podcast about it. So anyways, high five, man. Good for you.
Thank you.
So
yes, sometimes it's difficult because you know, many people, they are now, or the thing is, if you have like more subscribers, you may have more opportunities. If you talk to some people or to some companies, they are more open to maybe collaborate with you or to work with you. And because there are so many these people with hundreds of thousands of subscribers, then it may be sometimes quite difficult for me to actually find a good cooperation, because for this, comparing to these high-profile people with many subscribers, I'm just like teeny tiny.
Yes.
So sometimes it's kind of like I wish I would have more subscribers, because it could maybe help me to create the kind of videos which now I cannot create.
Right.
But yeah, let's see how it goes.
Let's see how it goes. Well, anyways, for our listeners, if you have not seen Robert's video, Robert, you teach Altium Designer and Altium Designer, but you also teach on some Cadence tools, correct?
Yeah, I try in most of my videos. I started with Altium because that's, as I explained, I wanted to remind myself how to do some specific things.
I love that.
But then I realized maybe I should not be only talking about Altium.
Yeah.
Because I could, my videos could be also interesting for other people using different CAD systems if I start using or if I start talking about the hardware design as a generic,
mm-hmm.
and maybe use also different tools to show these generic hardware design tips or tricks.
Yep.
So that's the reason why on my channel I use different CAD systems, but it's many times I try to show in the videos like cut independent
right
content.
Yeah, like principles and yes, guidelines exactly. That could apply to any tool. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but I need to use a tool to show this.
Yeah, and, yeah. It yeah, makes and sense, and it's good. It's sound reasoning. You don't want to, cut out or not allow others to benefit that may be using another CAD tool. So I think it's admirable. Just a quick behind the scenes to, you know, you and Fedevil, you mentioned that it takes a lot of time to produce one video. What kind of goes into that? Just briefly, people, I'm sure there's a lot that goes into it, but just, you know, give our listeners just a sense of, because I think it takes more than what people realize.
Yeah, and we were speaking about this the other day. Mm-hmm. So basically, I would like to say that when people make video, then the best videos, they look like they are very simple to create, and they are like... oh, of course, like click here, click there, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's much harder. And I remember like some of our students, they specifically, I remember one student, I met him on an exhibition, and he told me like, you know, I'm doing this one of your courses, and 10 minutes of your video, it takes me 1 hour to do everything, because in your, you know, when you are doing it, it's like very smooth, and it's everything is like click here, click there, and this, and when he tries to do it, like it's like it's not so simple. So that's exactly what is the preparation. So I also spend a lot of time before I create the video, and I need to prepare everything. I need to go and prepare the layout. I need to know where I'm going to click, what is going to happen. And then basically when I create the video, it looks like it's very simple, and it's like, 10 minutes video, but it takes me actually, I think like half an hour video on YouTube, which is not very special, mm-hmm. will take maybe 2 days to record.
Wow, yeah.
And when I'm creating courses, usually it's like 1 week of work. It creates 1 hour of video.
Wow. So I know my daughter, my youngest daughter, Hannah, has started dipping her toe into the YouTube life. And she has very passionate about health and, whole foods and all of that. And I remember she shot a video recently in New York, and it took her like 3-4 days to put together that thing. It took so much. So when you and I were talking, that's what made me think of it, like, wow, it does look so simple. Well, moving along, I want to talk, you know, get into the meat of our conversation. So again, I'm so thankful that you'll be presenting at Altium Live, and I've been a little bit in the background, sending you some people to connect with. So tell our listeners a little bit about the topic of your presentation and what inspired you to choose that topic.
Well, first, I was very surprised when you invited me. So I would like to thank you very much. And initially I was not sure exactly what kind of topic I would like to speak about. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you always have all these big experts, and I know there are like much better experts in EMC and EMI and all this high speed, you know, you have all these great people. And I thought, I need to come up with something else because you know, I feel good in designing boards and PCB layout, but all these theories, I don't consider myself to be like the theoretical person, so I'm more like practical person.
Well,
I like
that's
it.
What we need, though, Robert. That's the problem. We can't just teach theory and wave theory and EMI and EMC without like, yeah, but how do I lay out a board? You know, we need that. So, anyways, yeah, but, go away. We need like the practical.
There will be a lot of people who will be talking about these kind of topics. Uh-huh. So then I come up with this idea that what many people ask me, and even I would like to know it, it's about how other companies implement this hardware design process. So how other companies actually do hardware design. And now I don't mean like physically how they draw the schematic or how they draw the PCB, but I was more interested about like how they, for example, create and use libraries, mm-hmm. or how they collaborate together. I really wanted to know like...
Like the design flow.
Yeah, design flow. And mm-hmm. and I had like specific questions what I was not sure. Like many people say, I would like to design this board faster. So I would like more engineers work on this layout or on one schematic. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, like, does it really work? Are there companies would have more engineers doing doing layout on one board? And I wanted to know if I can be faster or if my company can be faster in this. Mm-hmm. So that's and then I was thinking like, oh, this could be a really good opportunity, this speech, like maybe make small research and ask different people how they actually do this hardware design in their companies, and then put it all together and maybe share the results with other engineers, because it's not so easy to get this information. You cannot really get this opportunity to ask many engineers to how they do the hardware design.
So it cracks me up that you say this small research, because I can tell you, our audience, not small research. Robert was very thorough. Like, I'd give him a lump of names and he's like, more, give me more people. And I'm like, and I'd give him more and then come back in and I'm like, more. And I was like, geez, Robert, how many people do you need? But he's being a little humble because he did a lot of research. So I, for one, cannot wait to sit through it, because some of the people that we introduced you to are with remarkable companies that we can't name here that make, say, the leading electrical car manufacturer in Silicon Valley, or, you know, just big names. And so, and some small ones too, right? Small, highly collaborative, tight design teams. So I think I don't know. I'm really excited about it. And I think that our attendees will be excited to hear it too. So
I hope so. That's what I'm trying to, you know, I really hope people will find it useful, and maybe it will help them to answer their questions, like, you know, what they are asking, like, am I doing this wrong? Or is this the right way to do it? How other companies do it? Because maybe they do it right, they just don't know, and they try to keep thinking like, what is the other way to do it? And they are doing it right, maybe.
Right. Well, I just did a podcast with Ben Jordan this week, and around here inside the halls of Altium, there's kind of this loose number and this kind of anecdotal thing that gets thrown around where you know, Ben and others will say that 80% of Altium users use 20% of the tool. You know, and I don't know how accurate that is, and I don't know that that's based on research, but I think the point is inside all tools, Altium Designer or any other one, there's so many goodies there that because of speed or time or lack of necessity, we don't tap into them. Why do you think, I asked Ben Jordan the same question, but I'm curious to ask you, why do you think that that happens?
To be honest with you, I need to say that even when I watch the new features, what are very often introduced in Altium, mm-hmm. on many of them, I think like, I don't really need it. I'm never going to use this. And sometimes I think like, this may be a very nice feature which looks great for marketing, but I'm not sure if it's like good and useful for real engineering life, and now you are going to cut it out.
No, not at all. And I think it's important that we speak frankly and honestly. And I don't think you're alone in that, because I have gotten, you know, it's a tricky thing to be a software company in that on one hand, we're driven to keep innovating. So we remain relevant at the top end of the engineering craft. At the same time, there's a bunch of single one-off guys or gals that are just doing contract work, and they'll never use the printed electronics feature. So I think what you're saying is relevant for a lot of people, but at the same time, as a, you know, publicly held company where we have stockholders and we do have engineers on the top end that need cutting edge, it's a really hard thing to manage. But so how do we keep innovating but make sure that we stay stable and relevant, you know, for the one person that's sitting doing contract work? So you're not wrong on this. I think that's a really valid point. But yes, now but what do you think about, do you think it happens that what I was telling Ben Jordan is, I have, say, my really awesome, the most current iPhone 10, and I'm sure there's features, I know there's features in there that I don't use, but once I learn about them, I'm really excited and they might save me a bunch of time. Do you think that happens also inside of EDA tools?
I think many features are nice to have. They are not necessary, but they're nice to have. But I keep saying, even like Altium, I have designed personally like very complex boards in Altium 2010. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even in 2010, the Altium had the capabilities to design basically any kind of board. What is happening with Altium is you add these other features. Mm-hmm. As I said, many of them are like nice to have. They are going to like make engineers' life a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you really need them. Mm-hmm. Some of the features are really good. Like some of the new features, one of the features I really like, which was introduced in, I think, like Altium 16 or 15, were the X signals. That was something what I really missed. Mm-hmm. But the things like pushing components, that's not really something what I would use. I don't even use it. Even if it may be like nice to have it, many of these features, I don't use it because it may... I've got used to work somehow with Altium. And if I start using some of the features, it may like mess up.
It throws
everything
off your workflow.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's a really legitimate point, is I think we get in habits, right?
Yes.
And all of us as CAD providers, you know, we keep updating our tool, and we have to, Robert, or we wouldn't stay in business, honestly. But I think you get in your jam, right? This works. I know how to do it. I know where all the buttons are. And I suspect, I mean, just thinking of my own habits and a variety of things, like don't mess up. I know how to do this. Like don't take me off track, because it will slow me down. My perception, it'll just slow me down. So anyways, interesting conversation. Can you just briefly tell us the topics that you're going to be covering at Altium Live, things that you learned from your research? I think you mentioned something. I think you said the number one subject you had was libraries, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely. Basically, I have not completed the speech yet. What I only completed partially completed is the research. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing the research, I mostly asked very similar questions. And as you say, mostly like the top topic, what I always was most interested about are the libraries. So how companies for example, create new components.
Mm-hmm.
And then how they actually like handle this component life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Like when someone creates the new symbol, or when they create new, or first when they need, when an engineer needs a new symbol, what is going to happen? What is the, like, how they handle it in the companies to get the component as quickly as possible to mm-hmm. the engineer? And mm-hmm. then how they are sure that these components, when the board is going to be built, how they are sure that the components are right, the footprints are right, and all the parameters, ordering information. Then how they create the huge libraries, if they use like integrated libraries, or if they use Vault, or if they have one library for specific project. You know, these are the kind of questions what I normally get from people when they finish, for example, a course. They ask me like, what do you recommend, how we should handle our library? And I say like, oh, it's not
that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
So, it's a very complicated topic, and I think I should jump in here and say that it is complex, and as an EDA software developer here, it's complicated for us to make the tool fit the situation and keep up with designers and what they're doing. And I recently did, I'll share this in the show notes below, I did a podcast with our one of our VPs, Lawrence Romai, to just explain what the heck we did when we went from Vault to Nexus Server to Nexus to Concord Pro. And not only is it complicated on the design side, it's complicated for us on this side. And I'll share that below. You know, I don't want to take all the time here to talk about how we've struggled on our end to provide the vehicle, much less get the work done. So I'm going to share that below so people can look into that.
Yeah. So basically, if I will go back to this library management.
Uh-huh.
Basically, from the research, I was thinking like, when I do the research, I will, after, I don't know, talking to 10 different people, I will start seeing like some kind of pattern, like this is the right way, how
Holy
it should be
Grail,
done.
The Holy Grail, yes.
Yeah.
The one magic way.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find the one magic way, Robert?
No.
I had a feeling you would say that. But there's probably a variety of ways that are effective.
Exactly.
That you could choose based on, because you know what we were talking about before, we all get in our sort of jam. We all get, the way that our brain is wired, we sort of tweak our workflow according to some of our personal bents, right? So I think that's why there's no magical answer, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest, what I saw from the research,
mm-hmm.
the big factor of how companies do hardware design is the size of the company or the size of the engineering team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things why I was not able to find one right way how it should be done.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, because it,
right.
because of these factors, different
right.
factors. Different companies, they will have different requirements.
That makes sense. If you have thousands and thousands and thousands, you're going to manage that different. If you have 50 designers versus 4 designers, of course you're going to manage that different. That makes a lot of sense.
But initially I thought there is like one solution for everything.
Wouldn't it be great?
Awesome.
Nothing in this industry, I have learned over many years, is ever that simple. You also talked about collaboration.
Yes.
Is that something else that you did research on? What are the problems? What are the challenges that exist around collaboration as you conducted your research? Excuse me.
So I was mostly interested to know how engineers communicate together.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have like mechanical engineers and PCB layout engineer and schematic design engineer, if there is like great way, if there are companies what would tell me like, this is the fantastic way which we use to talk between engineers. Mm-hmm. And then I was interested about, as I mentioned before, like I wanted to know how people handle these situations when more engineers work on one schematic or when they work on one PCB. And these were the questions what I was asking about.
Well, I'll be excited to hear about that because I'm sure there's a variety as well. And but the thing is like what I'm excited about your talk is I have a feeling you're going to show us the conclusions, but then sort of, I'm guessing, don't tell me. I don't give it away, but I think there'll be sort of a menu of different ways you can approach and you can choose what would fit your situation.
That's exactly. Yay. It was not my intention. My intention was have this one magic solution, but then I got more realistic and this is exactly how I think the speech
it'll
will
come together.
Yeah. So there will be like different solutions and you will hear like maybe you or the engineers can find a way which may be probably the best for them to do it or to implement it in their companies.
See how smart I am? I already figured out your talk. I have no idea what you're going to say, but I have a feeling it would look like that. A couple other, what challenges do you see that exist in and also in versioning and backup?
I ask this question because, again, many people ask me like what I think about versioning. I personally don't use any special kind of versioning, but I knew some people, some companies, they do. So I wanted to know how they do it, if they find it useful, and if they use it. And that's, yeah, I will also speak about these kind of cases and... And about the backup, I do backup, and I was interested in how other companies do it. But usually, like if they do this versioning, that's basically the way how they also do the backup.
Okay. And the last thing I know, or I'm sure there's more than this. These are just sort of the highlights. But this, I think, is also a very messy topic based on the work I've done here is document releases.
Because it's so complex. I remember when I was starting with hardware design, our document release was like hit the generate Gerber files and send it to PCB manufacturer. Yeah? But then I found out that's not the proper way to do it because you have to change like another 10 emails to actually be able to manufacture PCB. And then another 10 emails to actually build the PCB and maybe even more emails.
Yeah.
So the real like professional release procedure is much more complex process. And yeah, I wanted to hear how other companies do it. And I was speaking about the topics like how they can be sure that, you know, there are no mistakes in the schematic, how they check it. Because in these big companies, if they start producing, I don't know, 6,000 boards or 10,000 boards and something is wrong, it's going to cost a lot of money. So they need to have like a really great release procedure to be sure that all the documentation will actually be creating the proper board and there will be no like wrong components or, you know,
yeah, and it can stack up really fast. I mean, there's people that might design 4 boards a year, and there might be companies that crank out 4 a week, you know, those are going to be really different. And also, like you mentioned, the production quantities and you know, may be released overseas and need to be really clear and pretty bulletproof, or it's going to cost a ton of money. So that makes sense to me. You had mentioned to me, okay, so I'm going to stop there because I don't want to give away any more of your talk. So I'm going to give a shameless plug to invite people to come see Robert kind of unfold and unpack the conclusions of the deep research, not the small research that he did at Altium Live, which will be, he will be with us in San Diego, October 9th through 11th. So, okay, there's my plug. You talked about, man, we could talk for a really long time. I can't believe this much time has gone by. So, besides professional PCB designers, in your audience is also some students, some hobbyists, maybe some professional designers that do stuff after hours because they're very passionate about it. What do you think, this is kind of a hard question I think to ask, but what do you think attracts them to your training?
I have a different kind of courses. Okay. Basically, my very first course, it was quite advanced. And what happened is that many people, they wanted to take the course, mm-hmm. but they had no idea how to use Altium.
Right.
So I had to go kind of also a little bit different direction. I had to create also more simple course. Mm-hmm. And when I created number of these different courses and different levels of courses, mm-hmm. I actually found out that there are many people who are not really interested about these high speed things, but right. there are much more people who would like to learn how to design like Arduino board or some microcontroller boards for their for their home projects or something like that.
Right.
And also many people who signed up for our courses are like students what are, for example, they need to finish a project for their work.
Their capstone project or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think many times we receive a request from the teams what are racing the Formula cars. I'm not sure if you know these teams.
Which cars?
Formula cars.
Oh, yeah, like, the FSA. Altium actually sponsors a bunch of those teams. Yeah.
No, maybe that's why they
oh, that's funny.
Me these requests.
Yeah. No, sometimes I send them that way because they're like, how do we, because, I mean, think about it, Robert. You're a student. You have to make a car in 6 months. I'm like, what? I can't even believe they do it. Or a Hyperloop pod that breaks a world record against commercially funded. I don't know how these kids do it, quite honestly. I'm so impressed by them. So
these are some of our students. And then basically when they finish university, they have all these important basics to find a good job.
Yes,
and,
I love
and
that.
And many people, they are like junior engineers who actually join a company, but they would like to learn a little bit more about hardware design so they can move to a little bit better position.
I love that.
So there are quite kind of like beginners, we can call them beginners, mm-hmm. but they are really like interested to learn even Altium, even so complex and professional tool like Altium.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. We are running out of time, so let me figure out what I want to ask you because we have like 10 more things I want to discuss with you. I think the solution is we need to do this more than once. You and I talked about what Altium might be doing internally or, you know, strategically to support those level of designers. You know, as I mentioned, actually part of my job is to work with students. And so If I didn't need to make money for a living, I would do that part of my job for free. I love working with students and helping them get equipped, get jobs. I love attending some of these competitions. And some of the things that makes me feel proud to be part of Altium is things like Circuit Maker, right? That's free that they can use. And also Upverter is free. Circuit Studio is like Altium Designer Lite, and I think it's a hidden gem, and it's only like, I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think it's around $1,000, right? For a semi-professional tool.
Less.
It could be. It might be $500. Like I said, don't quote me on it. But I think we don't promote those tools maybe enough. I don't know. I don't have a lot of insight to that, into those products.
We do have some people who actually use Circuit Maker and Circuit Studio, but many people, I need to be honest with you, they don't want to learn this kind of tool because they would like to learn something what is used in like professional company.
Yep.
And that's basically because, you know, they don't want to spend their time learning something what they are not going to use in future. So it's much better and easier for them jump directly to Altium Designer. And that's what they actually find kind of difficult because there is like, or from what I feel and what I see, there is kind of just a little support from Altium side to get opportunity to try or learn Altium Designer by people who actually don't have the license.
Yeah, it's tricky because one of the things that not Altium has an amazing marketing team, and I'm on that team. And what I think a lot of people don't realize about Altium is we're sort of, you know, the story of David and Goliath, you know, in the biblical story. We're like little David because, for instance, I won't quote numbers here, but say in the last quarter, say a company like Cadence, we will have made one half, our sales will be one half of one of their quarters for the year because we don't make IC design tools and we don't do these other things. All we do is PCB design. So, of course, a smaller company is going to be more limited by resources. So I think people perceive us as equal size to Cadence, Mentor, Zukin. We're not even close, but by seat count, we make them look silly. So it's a hard conundrum we're in, right? Because we have more people out there using our tool, but we don't always have all the resources to do everything we want to do. We want to do more, trust me. And one of the things, like I said, that I've gotten to do, I'll share this one in the show notes too, if there's students out there. We give away licenses to students at university, and if they're on Teams, it's free. You can go on our website right now if you're a student, and if you're just in a class and you want to learn it, you can buy it for like $99, a full-fledged copy of Altium Designer, because we believe what you just said, that especially students that are going to make a career out of this, they need to learn on a professional tool. And we're not the only one that offers free tools. I think the free tools are for a different demographic, ones that are going to maybe are hackers, makers, hobbyists, maybe people who want to just dip their toe in before they step up. So I'm glad we do offer those things, because sometimes it helps people identify, say, a high school student that, like, I love this, you know, and it might help them identify their major in college, say. But meanwhile, they can go to makers fairs or be in hackathons or whatever it is, right? So I call it a gateway drug. You know, they can find out if it's something they really enjoy doing. So anyways, that's the way we look at it. I'll share our academic website in the show notes. So if students want to get it, they can. And we do provide it for free for teams. That's a no-brainer. So, and we do that all over the globe. And to your point, I think we can do more. We just, you know, other companies have a whole full-time team of people that run an academic program. Right now, you are looking at the one person on the team of the academic program. You know, I have some people that will help issue the license or something, but it's me, myself, and I, and a fellow named Chris Potts, and we're it. So we just need more resources to do it. And we'll get there. The more we grow, then the more resources we get to do it. So there, Robert. My goodness, we are at an hour already. We better stop talking, or everybody's going to turn off their podcast.
You said it's like 30 minutes.
I know. Well, not you and I. I don't think so. I want to do this again. I hope we can do this again, Robert. I think we have a lot more to talk about. I am so excited to work with you, and I'm happy to have the support to work with you now. I'm a big fan of the work you do and the training that you provide for engineers out there, and I'm very excited to hear your talk. So thank you so much for coming on today and telling us a little bit about how FedEvil got launched, and hearing the backstory was really fun. And so just can't thank you enough, buddy. It's been really, really fun.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And I really would like to maybe have a different talk where we could also speak about like other topics what people could be interested about. You know, we were speaking about this maybe support for people who retired or who they would like to learn Altium, even they are a little bit older, but they would like to learn Altium and they don't have these opportunities. But yeah, we can do this next time.
Okay, all right, we'll do that.
So thank you very much, Judy, okay, for inviting me, and I hope people will really like the results from the research, and I really hope it will help them, you know, when the talk is finished.
Well, we're really excited. I am going to share in the show notes the website for FedEvil, the address for Robert's YouTube channel. If you're one of the few people in the world who have not had the pleasure of learning under Robert's tutelage, all those resources will be available below. Robert, maybe you want to, do you do social media as well?
I do. Most of YouTube is the best to contact me and find me.
Okay.
I have Facebook. I have also Twitter account and LinkedIn.
Okay.
But YouTube is the best.
Okay. Well, share all those links with me so we can put them in the show notes and people can connect with you. So if they're not available to join us at Altium Live, they can surely get in touch with you and learn from all the great content you're putting out. And thanks so much for what you're doing for the industry. Appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to meet everyone in Altium Live conference.
So thank you to our listeners for joining us again. Please remember to like, subscribe, and send in your topics. We want to make sure that we're producing content that is relevant to you. So thank you for joining us again. Until next time, remember to always stay on track. We'll be right back.